Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, I can't get over it. So low, I can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, can't get over it. So low, can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it.
Hello and welcome to the Holy Half Hour here on 3TFM with me, the Reverend Alec Noble, Minister of Saltcoats North Parish Church. It's good to have your company, and in the next 30 minutes I hope to make it worth your while tuning in. I can guarantee you some great music of various kinds and some interesting patter in between, as always. Hopefully this particular programme will be even more informative and educational than usual, because the theme is epistemology. Now there's a great word for any Scrabble board. A word to show off with as you nonchalantly slip it into the conversation to show how educated you are. More about epistemology in a moment, but first, here is Chuck Berry singing about his school day.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom's ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your books. Keep it, the teacher don't know how mean she looks. Soon as 3 o'clock rolls around, you finally lay your burden down. Close up your books, get out of your seat. Down the halls and into the street. Up to the corner and round the bend. Right to the juke joint you go in. Coin right into the slot. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round you go.
So, what is epistemology? It's the study or the science of knowledge. It's thinking about how do we know anything? How can we prove things? What does it mean to say, I know? How can we be certain of things? Can we ever be certain of anything? What's the difference between statements of faith and statements of fact? What is knowledge? What's the difference between knowledge and wisdom? Recently, I as a Christian was involved in a lovely and lively discussion with a local Jew and his son, an avowed atheist. It was a good-natured discussion, and we all ended by thanking each other for a great chat. But what tickled me when I thought about it later is this. The Jew, the atheist, and the Christian each knew that they were right, and each thought that the other two were mistaken. How could we be so sure that we were right? How could we be so sure that the others were mistaken? How could we, or anyone listening in, decide who was right and who was wrong? And how could they be sure that their judgment was correct? Could all three of us be right, or all three of us be wrong? How do you weigh up scientific fact sort of statements as against faith sort of claims? Hopefully by now I have whetted your appetite for epistemology, and not just bamboozled you. Now, in case you're thinking that all this is a bit too academic for your liking, let me bring it back down to earth with this song. I was playing a CD in my car coming back from the supermarket when this song came on. and I immediately thought, that's a song about epistemology. I could make a whole radio program about it. As soon as I heard the Platters sing that song, I just knew it was a song about epistemology, and I just had to make this radio program about the subject. How did I just know? What kind of knowing is that then? That's the kind of knowledge that creative writers feel. We know that when inspirations come, they're like snowflakes on a dike. They're only there for a moment, and then they melt away. You just have to grasp the gift of an inspiration when you receive it. Notice my language. I'm saying that inspiration comes from out with us, and it's a gift from someone. And if acted upon quickly, more and more thoughts will follow on from the initial bright idea. I started with the opening lines of the song. They asked me how I knew my true love was you. And I soon ended up with a holy half hour of material, which I'm now able to share with you. As a creative writer, I find the process of creative writing fascinating. As a preacher, I start every week with a blank sheet of paper and a blank mind to go with it. Then, after a brief prayer to the effect, "Dear God, help, I've got a congregation coming on Sunday to hear a sermon, a word from the Lord. Please give me a word or two then." And I can't get any extension to my essay deadline as I did as a student. They will be there on the dot in their Sunday best, expectant. Every week it's a wee miracle, a big miracle, which fellow ministers of nobody else appreciate. Here's an example. About 100 years ago, there was a famous double act called Moody and Sankey, two Americans. Dwight L. Moody was a world-famous evangelist preacher, and Ira D. Sankey went all over the world with him as his singer. They produced the famous Moody and Sankey hymn book. They had mass rallies leading to millions of people becoming Christians. One night, at a packed mass rally, Moody finished preaching about Jesus as the Good Shepherd. He sat down and looked to Sankey to sing something appropriate. Unfortunately, he hit a blank. Thousands of eyes were staring at him. Souls moved by the sermon were ripe for harvesting, but he had already sung "The Lord's My Shepherd." He desperately prayed for help. Then he remembered that earlier in the week he had read a few lines in the newspaper and had cut them out. In fact, they were in his jacket pocket. So he took them out, and they were about Jesus, the Good Shepherd. But they were not a hymn, and anyway, he had no tune to sing them to. In a moment of inspiration, Sankey just started singing, composing the words and composing the tune as he went. And it came out flawlessly, verse after verse. Would you like to hear it? Here it is, sung by George Beverly Shea, who was the singer who accompanied the other great evangelist, the preacher Billy Graham.
There were 99 that safely lay in the shelter of the fold, but one was out on the hills away, far off from the gates of gold. Away on the mountains wild and bare, away from the tender shepherd's care, away from the tender shepherd's care. Lord, thou hast here thy 99, are they not enough for thee? But the shepherd made answer, this of mine has wandered away from me. And although the road be rough and steep, I go to the desert to find my sheep. I go to the desert to find my sheep. All through the mountains thunder riven, and up from the rocky steep, there arose a glad cry to the gates of heaven, rejoice, I have found my sheep. And the angels echoed around the throne, rejoice, for the Lord brings back.
You are listening to the Holy Half Hour as we explore the wonderful world of epistemology, the science of knowing. How did Sankey know what words to sing and what tune to sing them to? How do we know anything, anytime? It's a fascinating subject the more you get into it. Let me run by you some of the basic principles of epistemology. You can see what you think. First one is this. Some things we know from outside, for example, we measure a table by using a ruler. That is the correspondence test. But other things we know only from the inside, in terms of themselves. For example, dipping our toe into the water to test the temperature of the swimming pool. That's the coherence test. So when seeking proof, a detective would like several eyewitnesses to correspond and confirm the same story, and they would also like the accused to confess their guilt and give a coherent explanation of their motives and actions. Or again, when wondering if my girlfriend really fancies me, I would like her to show measurable signs to correspond with that theory, and I would like both her and myself to feel the love inside us too, to feel it's just right. I was once a school chaplain teaching a sixth-year class in Wallace High School in Stirling. They were busy writing when the girl in the front row said to me, just privately, "How do you know when you've met Mr. Wright?" Quite a question. What I ended up saying to her was this: "That's a very good question. I've been thinking a lot about that myself recently, because I have a girlfriend." You start off not knowing, but gradually you get to know each other. Then eventually you come to know that they are right for you and you for them. At one time you don't know, then you do know. How you get from not knowing to knowing, I don't know. But once you know, you really do know, you know? And she, not surprisingly, went, "Eh?" Gobbledygook though my speech was, you can see what I was meaning. And it is also a profundity. Isn't it amazing how gobbledygook can be wise? Try this, for example, Foster and Allen.
"There's a little girl and her name is Mary Mac. Make no mistake, she's the girl I'm going to back. There's a lot of other chaps that would get up on her track, but I'm thinking that they'd have to get up early. And Mary Mac's father's making Mary Mac marry me. My father's making me marry Mary Mac. I'm going to marry Mary for my Mary to take care of me. Well, I'll be feeling merry when I marry Mary Mac. Now this little lass, she has a lot of brass, she has a lot of class, and her father thinks I'm gas, so I'd be a silly ass for to let the matter pass. Her father really thinks she suits me fairly. And Mary Mac's father's making Mary Mac marry me. My father's making me marry Mary Mac. I'm going to marry Mary for my Mary to take care of me. Well, I'll be feeling merry when I marry Mary Mac. Now Mary and her mother go an awful lot together. In fact, you never see the one or one without the other. And the fellas often wonder if it's Mary or her mother, or both of them together that I'm courting. And Mary Mac's father's making Mary Mac marry me. My father's making me marry Mary Mac. I'm going to marry Mary for my Mary to take care of me. Well, I'll be feeling merry when I marry Mary Mac. Now the wedding day's on Wednesday and everything's arranged. Her name will soon be changed, I mean unless her mind be changed. And we're making the arrangements and I'm just a bit deranged, for marriage is an awful undertaking. And Mary Mac's father's making Mary Mac marry me. My father's making me marry Mary Mac. I'm going to marry Mary for my Mary to take care of me. We'll all be feeling merry when I marry Mary Mac. It's sure to be a grand affair, and grander than the fair. There's going to be a coach and pair for every couple there. We'll dine upon the finest fare, I'm sure to get my share. If I don't, we'll all be very much mistaken. And Mary Mac's father's making Mary Mac marry me. My father's making me marry Mary Mac. I'm going to marry Mary for my Mary to take care of me. We'll all be feeling merry when I marry Mary Mac. And Mary Mac's father's making Mary Mac marry me. My father's making me marry Mary Mac. I'm going to marry Mary for my Mary to take care of me. We'll all be feeling merry when I marry Mary Mac."
I love that song. Anyway, back on our subject of epistemology, the science of knowing. I love the famous spontaneous speech of Donald Rumsfeld, the American Secretary of Defense during the Gulf War, when he came out with the profound gobbledygook: "You see, there are things that we do know and things we do not know. There are also things that we know that we don't know, and things that we do not know that we don't know. Then again, there are things that we can possibly know, but currently don't know. And there are things that we know we cannot possibly know, but you never quite know." Yes, Donald, we get your drift. Or what about the speech which I heard 40 years ago in a review show in the Edinburgh Festival? I can remember these lines like it was 2 minutes ago. It's amazing the things that we can know and remember. Socrates: "They say that you are the wisest man ever." Socrates: "Oh, I wouldn't say that. I'm not so wise." Well, let me put it this way. The more you know, the more you know you don't know. I don't know nothing. But at least I know one thing, namely that I know I don't know nothing. Whereas many other people think they know everything and don't know that they don't know nothing. Think about this. As the circle of our knowledge increases, so the circumference, the line between what we know and what we don't know, increases too. So we're always chasing our tail. The more we know, the more we know we don't know. The more questions we find answers to, the more further questions are raised. The more we explore space, for example, the bigger the universe seems to get. This is why Solomon, the wisest of men, the author of the book of Ecclesiastes in the Bible, sighs, "In much knowledge is much vexation." Still, it is worth it, is it not? Imagine if we stopped the pains of learning at primary one. Where would we be? Well, actually, we all know people who have stopped learning and growing. They're content to think that they know everything already and have no need of the hassle of learning anything more. They never ask questions. They only pronounce with all the certainty of being right that only blissful ignorance can bring. All babies are born with a natural but why curiosity and a predisposition to learn and grow. Sadly, somehow, we manage to drum it out of them fairly quickly. I mentioned Socrates a moment ago. In the end, Socrates committed suicide out of frustration with the arrogant ignorance of the Athenian people, whom he was trying and failing to educate. Here's John Denver singing an epistemological anthem on behalf of all those who really do want to learn.
There are children raised in sorrow on a scorched and barren plain. There are children raised beneath the golden sun. There are children of the water, children of the sand, and they cry out through the universe, their voices raised as one. I want to live, I want to grow, I want to see, I want to know, I want to share what I can give, I want to be, I want to live. Have you gazed out on the ocean, seen the breaching of a whale? Have you watched the dolphins frolic in the foam? Have you heard the song the humpback hears 500 miles away, telling tales of ancient history, of passages and home? I want to live, I want to grow, I want to see, I want to know, I want to share what I can give, I want to be, I want to live. For the worker and the warrior, the lover and the liar, for the native and the wanderer in kind, for the maker and the user, and the mother and her son. I am looking for my family, and all of you are mine. We are standing all together, face to face and arm in arm. We are standing on the threshold of a dream. No more hunger, no more killing, no more wasting life away. It is simply an idea, and I know its time has come. I want to live, I want to grow, I want to see, I want to know, I want to share what I can give, I want to be, I want to live, I want to grow, I want to see, I want to know, I want to share what I can give, I want to be.
In the world of epistemology, there are objective proofs and subjective proofs. Objective proofs are indisputable facts like 2 plus 2 is 4, or traffic lights are red, amber, and green. Subjective proofs are when we say, I know because I was there and saw it for myself. Or, I may look healthy to you, but I know that inside me right now there's a sharp pain. Many people seem to think that there is subjective truth, meaning that if I believe it, it must be true. Tempting though this is, it is rubbish. I may believe I can fly, but if I jump out of an aeroplane without a parachute, I will soon discover that my subjective belief is false. Wishful thinking is not truth. There are many beliefs out there, and in today's culture we're tempted to think that they might all be valid, especially our own beliefs. But it doesn't work that way. Some people are right and some people are wrong, and it's important to check out if we are right or wrong. This is especially true when the matter is God. It will make an eternal difference to us whether we are right or wrong in our beliefs about God. And God either exists or he does not. He is objectively alive and here, or he is not. Our subjectively believing or disbelieving does not make him exist or not exist, love us or not love us. Here's a third thought. Different things have to be studied in different ways, in ways which are appropriate to what is being studied. It's the thing that we are studying and not us which determines how we study it. For example, we study stars by using a telescope, and we study lemon meringue pies using our tongue. If we try doing it the other way around, it doesn't work. We study a theory by discussing it, but we get to know a person by making a relationship with them, if only just to chat them up. So how do we study God? Telescopes don't do it. Our tongue certainly doesn't. Discussion is not enough. No, if God is a person, the only way to know him is by some degree of personal relationship, only by engaging with him, not by detaching from him. We cannot put God in some sort of lab and conduct experiments on him. Rather, we chat him up and we start a courtship to get to know him. Or to be more accurate, he takes the initiative, he crosses the dance floor and chats us up. Then we respond. He taps us on the shoulder, so we turn round. He reveals. We don't discover and uncover things. When it comes to knowing anyone, it involves a bit of a courtship. It involves a bit of giving of ourselves, trusting, taking a step of faith. We can't stand back coldly and Google questions or put God to a laboratory test. Faith and trust just builds up little by little as we get to know a person, till at some point we are more sure of them than of anything, and we come to deeply, deeply love and trust them. That is the climax of all epistemology, the best kind of knowing of all. The old version of the Bible said that Adam knew Eve, meaning that they got married and had sex and babies. We are known by God, and we can come to know God, or Jesus as he likes to be known. Wow, I think of prayer as spiritual intercourse. It's how I get to know him personally. Think about that. I once said that at a conference I was attending in Perth. They immediately asked me to be their speaker in the afternoon to hear more about this spiritual intercourse. I think I'd better stop now, but I hope I've whetted your appetite for a lifetime of epistemology. So bye for now.
I remember the eve of destruction. How long, and I sang along with get peace a chance now. No war, no war, no one stands alone. The cold, cold nights of the evening comes. Turn. I was walking down the streets of Memphis. Elvis, Elvis, but I never met the king in Graceland. So sad, too bad. No one stands alone forever. A candle in the wind, with the blue, blue tune of a gospel song. brother Martin. Freedom, freedom. But I woke up to resurrection. Heaven, heaven. No one stands alone forever. A candle in the wind. When the bright red sun of the morning